Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast, is brought to you today in part by Audible, offering anytime, anywhere listening of your favorite audiobooks with the biggest selection ever, and it's all backed by Amazon. And the audiobook I am currently obsessed with is The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas. There are so many people talking about this book, I couldn't wait to purchase the audiobook, and let me tell you, it does not disappoint. I wish I could just say, go listen to this right now. It's an important and powerful work, and part of you will be changed by reading it. But that's how it affected me. The story revolves around a police shooting of an unarmed black teen by a white cop in front of the teen's female black friend. That friend is Star Carter. She tells our story, and she lives out her own story as the sole witness to this brutal and unnecessary murder. Okay. That's where I'm stopping. Go read this book right now. Visit the show notes for this episode at allthewonders.com and start your free trial with Audible and support this podcast with the same click of a mouse or tap of a screen. I hope you'll go try it out and see for yourself. Happy listening. Meet Sean Harris and check out the casual textbook he helped create. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 408 of the podcast with Sean Harris. Sean's art in Her Right Foot, the newest picture book by David Eagers, is gorgeous. And the story within the book's 109 pages about the Statue of Liberty is a complete wonder. Any book that can cause you to think differently about an object today and every day to come possesses a certain bit of magic. But what Sean lends to Her Right Foot in regard to his talent as a picture book artist and paper collage artist was exactly what the story needed. You need to experience this book. Like, now. Go put it on hold through your library, or add it to your cart, or whatever you need to do. It's beautiful. You'll love it. Here's episode number 408 of the podcast with Sean Harris. Welcome to the podcast, Sean Harris. I'm excited to have you here.
Thank you. It's almost, an honor to be here.
I almost said welcome twice. Welcome, I'm excited to welcome you. Let's not do that.
You can never feel too welcomed. It's all right.
All right. Sean, I'm glad you're here. Sean, I'm glad that I have this massive picture book debut of yours on my lap right now currently to celebrate with you. Congratulations on your debut on Her Right Foot with Dave. Eggers.
Thank you. And when you say massive, you're just talking about sheer volume of pages here.
Sheer volume of pages. It is heavier than said normal picture book.
It is. I think 109. The pages aren't numbered, but they are in my head. So, I know exactly what number each page is.
So I assume also in your head was thinking, why debut with one picture book when I can debut with one the size of three picture books?
That's right. Let's have 2017. Like, let's just do all of 2017's work in one go. Yeah.
All in one swing. Well,
Yeah.
you did a great job, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Thank you.
But first, why don't I give a chance just to have you share what the book is. What is Her Right Foot? What is this story as you saw it and as you approached it?
Oh man. Well, I guess let me start. I'm pretty linear in how I approached making the book and how I guess, well, reading it is obviously very linear. The book kind of ends in a very different place than it starts, which I guess may just be the sign of a good narrative. But the book kind of starts out as a casual kind of conversational textbook. If you're a Dave Eggers fan, a fan of his novels for adults and nonfiction for adults, it kind of has his signature tone. And I was a Dave Eggers fan. I have been since, you know, college years. So I was really attracted to that. I was like, oh, cool. We've got a textbook about the Statue of Liberty. The title, Her Right Foot, refers to the foot belonging to the statue. And then at a certain point in the book, it sort of pivots, not to draw on a on the foot metaphor too hard, there's sort of a turning point in the middle where it's at least, you know, on my first read, I was like, oh, Dave is up to something here, and that's when it got emotional to me, and it became clear to me that Dave is interpreting this statue and kind of reminding himself and the reader and me as his artist what she means now. She's sort of a symbol. I mean, she's the biggest symbol in America, and or one of the biggest symbols anyway. You know, I don't know. I guess I just sort of thought of her standing in the harbor there in New York as sort of a nod to the Ellis Island days of
yes.
boat immigration. And she seemed like an antiquated symbol of America, but yet we still put her, you know, in our car insurance commercials and on our stamps and on our Coca-Cola bottles and whatever. And it became clear to me, like, oh, Dave is like kind of renewing an interpretation of this statue and what she means for the country that I live in, that you live in today. That was really powerful to me, that it went from being a textbook, which, you know, a really fun textbook, to being something that was a very personal interpretation of the author, but it was also like, It moved me, and it really warranted being a 109 page book because it covers a lot of ground, but in a way that I think only Dave could do. He's so entertaining, and he's you have to be really smart to be that as earnest as he's able to be at times too. His view of you know, what our country could be today, what we stand for, what he stands for as a person, it was really strong for me, and it felt really great for me to be able to, as an artist, take allegiance with his words.
Yeah, he starts, you know, you're talking about the book being a textbook to begin with, and I fully mm-hmm. agree, and he goes through how the statue was sort of why we have it, what it was created to represent, and where it came from, who designed it. And some of the text even points directly to, well, just to give an example of his voice and the book sort of being aware of what purpose it's serving in the beginning. Dave writes, and I like that you can hear him respecting the reader. He's never sort of insulting the reader.
No.
He's just sort of saying, I know you think you know what this is about. Let me show you something more. Let me show you something mm-hmm. that will make you appreciate it. I know you already appreciate this statue, let me make you appreciate it even more. I feel like it's always that. There's never a resentment toward so many people just walk past this statue and don't think it's anything. There's never, ever that tone. It's,
right.
It's just sort of, well, here, it just starts. You may have also, I'm starting just a couple pages in after he says, you may have heard about France and people that live in France. Well, he continues, you may have also heard of something called the Statue of Liberty. Turn the page here. Did you know that the Statue of Liberty comes from France? This is true. This is a factual book. And he continues on to say how the Statue of Liberty came from France. But as you're saying there in the beginning too, the way he sets up the story, I feel like he gets us all to the same page. And that's what I really valued about his writing. It was, I don't know where along the line you don't know about the Statue of Liberty. Let's make sure we all get up there. Because even at one point toward the middle, and you mentioned about that pivot, and I wanted to compliment you on when your art does that pivot. I like that word because you allow us a rest on your art because you have a full spread with no words on it is when when we turn. And we even turn on, we literally turn on the foot when we're asking, here, what are the words? It says, what do you notice when you see this picture? And it's of a boy and a man staring up at the foot from at the base. But I was just going to say from prior to that, from leading in, there's even a point as we go in here that he says, you can just hear the facts become more and more like, are you sure you knew this? Or I bet you thought you knew this, but here's something somebody else probably never told you. Or here's something I'm almost willing to bet you've never seen before or you've never heard of before. The way that he funnels in the knowledge to get down to that place of, you at this base layer, most of you have heard of this thing, and if you haven't, let me tell you about it. And then let's go one layer deeper, and one layer deeper, till we get to a place that almost assuredly none of us have considered the fact that this statue is in movement and has meant was designed to be in movement. He refers back to the designer and says often, those chains that are broken on her feet, that they're there for a reason. And the book that she's holding, that's there for a reason.
Right, right, right. And in that way, like, basically Dave's text for this book is basically an art criticism, essay on the Statue of Liberty. You know, he's basically, do you know what I mean? And so to illustrate that, like, I got to illustrate a piece of writing that is art in itself, that is critically analyzing another piece of art, which is this thing we don't even think of as art anymore very often because it's the symbol that just gets thrown around as, oh, that's America. But that is a beautiful piece of art in itself, and artists made that, and why did they make that? And this whole thing is like, It feels like it's falling into itself, right?
Oh, I like that. My feeling of his text, that worked so well with your art. Your collage work, Sean, is beautiful, and I admire that you did. How many? 109 pages. I heard you say it.
Yeah, well, but you just called me out for doing a pictureless page, so I guess 107.
The 109 pages.
Yeah.
Of Wait, a pictureless page? A textless page?
Is there it's only text. That's the one you just read, right? When it says you probably haven't seen pictures of her feet.
Oh, that's...
Held that one back. I held that one back. The one right before you first see the close-up of her feet.
Yes.
So you were looking at the one with the heel up in the air.
I was looking at the heel up in the air. I did do
a textless page there, too.
Good call.
It evens out. Me and Dave work balances.
Where I was going to lead with that, though, is just to say that I admire that art criticism thought. That's a really cool way of thinking about it. For me, it felt like, well, two things. It felt like putting in my earbuds and going into a museum and playing one of the narrations that goes along with the museum so that you can sort of have this self-guided tour through a museum and have things pointed out to you as you walk.
Mm-hmm.
This felt like that. Your art felt like, it just felt like a camera walking us through this town into, you know, from France into America to the base of the statue being built. There was just a quality there. I think maybe because of the way you so well balanced those times that we were close up looking at the whole statue, looking at a scale of what people look like alongside her. But the other side of it reminded me of, and this I think is just going to show that I listened to maybe too many podcasts. this is wonderful, wonderful podcast that I'll throw out just in case you've heard of it or somebody else listening has heard of it. Have you ever heard of The Memory Palace with Nate DeMayo?
No, I know the concept from Sherlock, but yeah.
There you go.
No, I don't. Well, I don't know the podcast.
The podcast Memory Palace is of this guy Nate DeMayo, who's like this amazing storyteller, and he just talks. The best way I can describe it now, having read this book, is it sounds exactly like the way Dave wrote, which is to say, like, let me walk arm in arm with you, and we're gonna walk into this historical setting or these sets of circumstances or into this museum or whatever, and let's look at this topic from all sides together.
Right.
Feels very feels like a caretaker in a really complimentary way. And so to have your art take care of the reader as well alongside Dave's work, you have his text setting us up, but then you have displayed the art, you've showcased it in such a way that allows us to investigate while we're listening to his words. And I think that's really important. And I love that you show that we're zooming in on the pieces, the parts that make the whole. And that mirrors the way, as you were saying with the art critique, that mirrors the way the statue was constructed. It was constructed in parts and then assembled as a whole and then taken down and then put back up again. There was the fact. There was the fact. Did you know that the Statue of Liberty was built in France and was there for a year before they took it down and brought it over to America? That was the fact that was like, I bet you didn't know this. I love that.
Right.
I didn't know that. That was great.
I didn't know that either. I mean, when I've read this to kids though, a lot of kids do know that. And I'm like, you guys are cool.
But so here's a weird connection though.
That way the book scales up and down really interestingly, right?
Yeah.
Like, it kind of, the book almost feels like it matures at times, but then there are facts that first graders know that I don't about the statue, and it scales. Dave did a great job of, I think, making it sort of an all audiences book and engaging all of us.
I love when you have books that feel big, right? 109 pages is a big book, but the way that the text is laid out in this book, it's often just one sentence per page with a lot of picture to take in. I'm grateful to Chronicle to allow you that space to just let the book take up space and let it take the time it needs to read it. I thought that was of great value too. I was going to say, in talking about this, I don't know that this is something that Dave explores later or not in just, you know, I know when you research, you do way more research than can ever get into a book. But as I was reading that fact about the statue being built in Paris and then deconstructed and brought over to America, it made me think, I mean, in the book, let me connect the dots for people that haven't read this yet.
Sure.
I'm realizing I need to set this up.
Sure. Yeah.
The person that designed the the structure, the beams, the lattice, the whatever you call that underneath part, beneath the plates, that part was the guy who designed the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah.
But here's the connection then. It wasn't the Eiffel Tower first appearing in a World's Fair in, not in Paris? Or maybe it was built in Paris and they thought they were going to take it down and they kept it up.
It was in Paris for the World's Fair.
I was making a mixed up remembering that I thought it was that existed
I'm only remembering that from Greg Pozzoli's Tricky Vic too.
There you go. That's probably my connection then. Then to know that though, regardless of not switching countries, but to know that the same person that designed that also had the connection to the statue is just, there's so much that I felt like a great sense of pride was welling up in me as I was reading this book. And that I thought was nice. And as you're saying about reading the manuscript and choosing to take it on and those moments where the story pivots, it sounds like you were feeling that too.
Oh my God. I got chills my first read through. So can I tell you how I got this book? How I got this job?
How did you land this job?
So yeah, okay. Sorry, we can come back to
No.
put it with our noses inside of this book because there's a lot more
I love it. I just thought like
to
the
talk
same
about in here,
magical
but
book
yeah.
fairy granted your wish or something like they do with everyone else.
Yeah, okay, so this is my first picture book, and I mentioned that I was a Dave fan and that I grew up friends with Mac Barnett, picture book author. And so I kind of sat in the passenger seat and watched Mac's picture book career take off. I actually did sketches for his very first book, Billy Twitter's Blue Whale Problem.
And they went
And
with Adam
they
instead.
went with Adam Rex. We didn't even get to the publishing phase. I was on tour with my punk band. Mac was had no agent and was this is before John Sheska kind of was the ambassador to Mac meeting Steve Malk back in the day. This is just Mac is in college and has this really funny idea, and he's like, "I think this might be a picture book." And I'm like, "Well, I'll draw some pictures." And I was on tour with my punk band. Anyway, cut forward. I'm friends with Mac, and so I know his agent and some of his friends, and I'm friends with John Sheska, but they just know me as Mac's friend that's in a punk band. And I was camping, with my wife and my dog, and I was out of service for maybe two days. It was a long weekend, right? So it was like we came back into town. We were up in Big Bear, up in the mountains, above Los Angeles, and we came into town after being off the grid for a couple days, and I got a call from Mac Barnett, and he's like, "Hey, what do you think about that email about Dave Eggers?" And I'm like, "Well, I don't get emails about Dave Eggers. What are you talking about?" And he's like, "You haven't read it yet?" I'm like, "No." And so Mac's girlfriend is an editor at Chronicle
Yeah,
Books,
Taylor
and the
Norm,
email
yeah.
was from Taylor Norman, and she sent me an email like the Friday that was like, "Hey, Sean, long weekend. I don't know if over the weekend you could do some samples. Dave Eggers has this book, and we're looking for someone that can work in cut paper collage. And I know that you can do it because over the course of my touring in my punk band, I had kept up with art by doing design work and illustration for bands. So I had done a bunch of collage stuff for bands, their LPs, tour posters, that kind of stuff. And I was did a lot of screen printing work and that kind of thing. So anyway, she knew I was a multimedia person, and they were very familiar with my art, although nobody from the picture book world would be. And she's like, "We need someone specifically to do cut paper. Also, we can't get Christian Robinson because he's got a waiting list of 3 years, and we want this book to come out in a reasonably short amount of time because it feels like America specifically needs this book to come out in a reasonably short period of time. Are you in any sort of position to drop everything this weekend and do some samples so that I can show them to Dave? Because you don't have a picture book website that I can just send to Dave Eggers and say, I've got a guy." But
Oh, it's amazing.
they wanted this multimedia cut paper look because Dave had written a book called This Bridge Will Not Be Gray about the Golden Gate Bridge. And Chronicle, he put it out on McSweeney's. And Chronicle bought the rights to that as part of a series that he would write about monuments. And he had this idea about the statue and turned in the manuscript, and they loved it, so they bought this series from him. So she's like, "We need somebody that can work not ape Tucker style, but work in cut paper so that this all makes sense if you were to look at the Bridge book and this book and a third book that is yet to come. That we want them all to be the same trim size and look good on a shelf together. So you don't, you know, that, and I was like, well, I think I could do that. I mean, the collage stuff I was doing was very different. It was for bands, so it was a bit more edgy and weird, probably. But
I was showed like, that you have an understanding of what you're doing. You have like a command of the art, right?
Yeah, I'm very comfortable in the medium. So there I was like, let me give it a shot. I have a pretty good picture book collection, I think, just from being a fan of Mac stuff. And he would always call me problems and ideas. So over the course of 10 years, I kind of was versed in the same inspiration that Mac was. And we're both big, like, Tomi Unger fans. Yeah. And so anyway, I had an idea for the look immediately, but I was like, I need to try it. And they're like, okay, great. Well, you kind of missed the first 2 days of the long weekend. Is there any way that we could get these tomorrow? And I was two hours away from my house, camping out in the middle of nowhere. And I told my wife, and my wife is also a big Dave Eggers fan. And I was like, what if we left and you missed out on one day of camping, and I went and stayed up all night and did three samples for Dave of the Statue of Liberty in New York? And she's like, oh my God, you have to, this is Dave Eggers. Like, who gets this call? Like, when will anybody ever get this call again? You know, like, this book goes to Christian Robinson or Carson Ellis, except for this specific book that can't wait. And in this specific time when Tucker Nichols couldn't do the book because he was signed up for a bunch of gallery events over the next 2 years and couldn't take the time off to do a 100-page book. Like, this is the only time this ever happens. Like, yes, let's go. So we sped home, and I stayed up for it was one night, and then Dave liked the samples, and then they immediately needed a cover to publicize the book. So it turned into about a week, a sleepless week, but I got the job, and I was ecstatic, and only met Dave on the phone, and then just kind of got the manuscript and hit the ground on research and sketches and all that. And so I actually finished the last piece and then went up north to meet Dave in person, although we had a lot of phone conversations.
Oh, that is, that's amazing. Did any of the art that you, the three pieces that you did any of those stay the same when they went into the
book? There is one in the book.
Is there?
There's one of those is in the book, and it is the spread where Bartholdi is in France sitting at a cafe, and the statue is erected in a square in France. It's a pink. All of France was rendered in pink cut paper. So I think it was like 23 or something like that.
Yeah, with the Metropolitan. Yeah. With the bike against the building.
Yes. Yes, that was one of my samples.
That's a great one to do. What great!
It's actually Dave's favorite piece from the book. So I have the original.
I like that. Yeah. Well, I mean, this is what happens when you're Dave Eggers. You can get originals of cut paper things. That's amazing.
That's right.
You did. I like when you look at it. You can see just because it's because of the layers. It's got a feel to it, which is nice. You could see that as he's sipping his coffee, you can just see that like the white is the negative space.
Yeah.
Cut around.
Yeah.
It just looks cool.
Yeah. Cool.
It's not a white sheet of paper laying down there.
I thought I was going to do that negative space trick, on every, like all throughout the book. And then I kind of forgot the trick. So when you point that out, I'm like, oh, that's another book right there. That's cool. Yeah.
No, this is, so you have this book, and they know that they want it to be a hundred and some odd pages. Mm-hmm.
Actually, before... they let me do the pagination. So
that's good.
So I think I really let this thing spread out. But I don't know. I mean, just as a kid, as an adult, I really like the rhythm and balance of seeing. You know, of, I don't know. I just, I, it's really important to me that the text and the pictures balance. When you get yes. a really text heavy book or a really illustration heavy, well, that can go a different way, but it kind of leans more early reader, and that's not this book. I don't know. I didn't want to scare the first graders away from this book. I didn't want to scare the kindergartners away from this book. So I didn't want to have, like, you know, massive paragraphs on one side of the page.
That's where I was coming at it too, yeah. Sean, that I like I said earlier, I like that it's a big book, mm-hmm. but I don't have any problem with picture books that have a long word count.
Yeah. But
the challenge I have though is that text, the pressure mm-hmm. on the text becomes even greater because your engagement as a reader is in a picture book specifically is a balance between that text and that art. And once you've sort of read the story in the art and you're mm-hmm. ready to move on, I feel that it then becomes at odds with the text and you're ready to move on instead of allowing the text room to breathe. So in doing yeah. this, you've provided that space that we can go slower because we can take in the pictures, but,
right.
but otherwise we're only limited by that, you know, the short text on each spread. So.
Yeah. I like to imagine the book being read to me by somebody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, the time that if there's a big text on a page there, aside from that one time when I broke the rule and put all the text on a facing itself on a spread, you know, I feel like your eye needs to play in that picture for that duration, you know?
I always love when I get books that my son and I read together, because this mm-hmm. is the thing as he gets older, he's 7 now, as he gets older, we're really reaching a neat point where, in particular, and I've talked about this on the recording before, my son seems to be drawn to nonfiction, which is a really beautiful thing. It's nonfiction cool. and comics. It's a really cool thing. But, having as many picture books we have in the house, because I read what I do and I review the way I do, I think that he's really starting to be able to communicate his taste in art in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And having something like this that's so engaging to look at, your cut paper, is something that is really pretty. And even down to that page where you said you sort of cheated the art, where you just have the text in squares or in rectangles against the background, you're mm-hmm. still reminding us, though, when you get down to the simplest representation of this statue, you have the copper in the background paper to that sort of tannish color of copper over mm-hmm. to the switch of that greenish mm-hmm. blue. So I feel like there's still something you're communicating there.
That is the statue. You could just be, your nose could be on it, but
exactly.
yeah,
absolutely. But knowing, I guess as readers, as we read this, knowing that every choice is intentional. I was going to lead into, and I feel like we've already talked about it.
That page was so funny to me because Dave is talking about
seeing pictures.
Seeing the yeah. picture of the statue. And I'm like, what funniest thing that I could possibly offer? Like, this is my best joke, is giving you no picture with that. So yeah.
Not only no pictures, but Dave even says, there's one thing that you might not know, and this is the central point to this book, a point the author apologizes for taking so long to get to. And it's just on,
right.
like, blank illustration.
He takes the piss out of himself over here, and then I take the piss out over here. Yeah, we have a good time with that.
But
one.
I was going to
yeah.
say, where I was going to mm-hmm. lead into with this, and I was saying that I feel like we probably touched on it already a couple times, mm-hmm. is that when you were laying out this book, when you were paginating it, when you were doing thumbnails, to know that every choice, every composition that you do is intentional, and to have this be a moment where we pause,
yeah.
I felt like there's moments throughout that you give us a chance to look closely at people's faces. We look at the statue in shadow. We look at the statue positioned in different locations around the area as if because we're asking the question of, where is she walking toward? Where is she going? There were just different things there that I felt like, again, I'm not sure how much has changed in the way that you originally thumbnailed it, but you've mm-hmm. shown us in 100 pages, you've shown us the statue 100 different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows so much space for the readers to see for themselves. And I feel like in that way, I just want you to hear that compliment, Sean, that I felt like you were, not just because of timing, not just because you were available, you were the perfect match for Dave for this book. Your art was exactly what his text needed.
Thank you. Well, I feel really lucky to have got this book. And also, man, you know, the beginning of 2017 politically was a really tough time for a lot of
and that's
for a lot of
working,
us,
right?
And yeah, I was working on this the end of last year, the beginning of this year, and man, I mean, what there? You know, there were some really really dark days in there where you know me and people that I'm close to felt really helpless and like, wow, we don't have a voice right now, and it felt so good to be able to talk to my friends about this book and to know that this book was going to come out and to know that I got to. That my interpretation and my artwork, my communication of these same ideas that Dave is writing about, were going to be shared with people was really, I don't know, it got me through some tough stuff I just feel like there's a really great power in this book. I feel really lucky to have got my hands on it So, thank you for the compliment, how lucky I was to have come down out of the mountain for a meal on my camping trip.
No doubt. Sean, I want to ask if maybe, if you have a copy of the book in front of you, I want to ask if maybe you can read an excerpt to
sure.
us. Particular thing I would love to ask you, but before that, I thought I would ask, because I know our time is starting to wrap up, I thought I would ask, is there anything that you wanted to share about your process or about the manuscript that I didn't ask you, that you wanted to make sure people, that your readers, that everyone got to hear?
That's a good question. So the medium, we talked about this, is cut paper with ink. So there's some line. I tried to be as spare with my line as possible and use a lot of shape, like really play into the shape of the paper. There was a funny point when, so I did sketches. My editor Taylor and Dave really liked the sketches. There were very minimal notes, some stuff from Fact Check about a coffee pot that was anachronous and it wasn't invented for another 20 years and or something, you know, like there were some really detailed Fact Check notes on this nonfiction book that I was like, oh wow, okay, I'm playing in the big leagues here. So I did my sketches, and then for myself I did a kind of better set of sketches that I didn't turn in, and then I drew the whole book digitally. I wanted to get a really good idea of how many pieces of paper I was going to need for each spread, and I just really needed to map out the color, and so digital was the way that I chose to represent that. And I didn't need to turn those in, but I that wasn't a deadline that I had, but I just wanted to check again with Dave and Taylor and Chronicle, like, hey, like, do you guys have any more notes, because this is still, once I start cutting paper, I would appreciate the least amount of notes as possible, because yeah, it gets hard to edit once you go into that world. Now is a great time, like, you know, speak your last words. They actually, Dave and my editor thought it was the finals, and they're like, "Oh, cool, you're ahead of deadline." And I was like, "Well, these are actually digital mock-ups, and I'm doing all these with cut paper." And they're like, "Oh, are you sure? These look really good."
Can we talk you out of doing cut paper?
At that point, I was like, "Am I sure?" Because obviously, there's a lot of X-Acto knifing, and the ink is relatively quick, but the X-Acto blade is tricky. So at that point I was like, man, do I really want to do this? And then I did one piece. I did that Paris piece. Mm-hmm. which was I did it with cut paper first, but I redid it And I was like, let me see what it looks like if I really, you know, do this right. And I looked at them side by side, and the cut paper one with ink was actually a little messier, but it had, there were, like you said, there was the shadow where he's punched out of the pink. It had that, you know, je ne sais quoi, you know,
it had a presence. It had a feel.
It had a feel. I wanted to hold that book. And the other one was just like, it looked really cool on my screens, the digital one, but it didn't feel like the object of a book. And I was like, man, I think this is going to be important. I think this is gonna be important.
It's the brushstroke lines. It's the mistakes that you can't make intentionally. There's minuscule corners of paper, like turned up or frayed or whatever, that you can study up close, and it makes it feel like it's a real thing, because it is.
Right.
To do digitally would mean you actually have to put in the mistakes, and that just, no, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
When you make these, then do you, I'm going to ask two questions, and sure. I apologize for my ignorance just because I don't know.
No, but
when you made the art in this, do you have to like package it up and then turn it into Chronicle for them to scan, or are you able to scan and submit that?
No, that's not ignorant at all. So I actually, my first attempt, I scanned them. I scanned these pieces. I don't have an oversized scanner, so I just scanned some of the smaller stuff. And I was originally planning on sending originals to Chronicle to kind of do, you know, like the old school Ezra Jack Keats style, where he just like turns in a stack of originals and the publisher scans and designs. But we found, and this was actually a note from my editor. She was like, you know what? These almost don't look as much like these almost look more like your digitals, because there wasn't the presence of shadow when it was sitting flat on a scanner screen. So actually what you're looking at in this book is photographs taken from above the pieces.
Yes. Okay.
And so that's why there's like a good example is the page that has the Edison record player inside of the statue. You can really see when you see that white on white of her crown over her arm raised. It's somewhere kind of like right in the middle of the book. But when you see the white on white, you really see what the shadows do. For the piece, you know, and that's it, when you put it on a scanner, that's not very pronounced. So, I called John Clausen, who I know scans and photographs a lot of textures that he uses in his art. And I was like, dude, if you want shadow, if you don't want to admit shadow, like, how do you do this? And he's like, oh man, so you're going to need to build an overhead rig, and get a specific lens. He's like, I hope you have a good camera. And luckily my wife is a photographer. And, so we ordered a specific lens. It was, a 50, and I forget what the kind of glass is, but it was a specific type of glass that he, nudged me towards. And, it's just really sharp. It's a prime lens. So there's no zoom on the camera when you use this lens. So actually, when the pieces varied in size, I would have to change how many stacks of records the camera tripod was sitting on.
That was cool.
Kind of a pain.
Okay.
But these little things just kind of made the difference and made these pieces feel like you could almost pull one of these pieces off of the pieces of paper off of the page, you know, which is the entire effect. So
it absolutely feels that way.
In that bridge book that Tucker Nichols did, he did a really good job of capturing shadow too. And I noticed when I look at like some other collage artists, like the 70s guys, like Ezra Jack Keats and stuff, their stuff is flat because they were scanning it. And like, I'm just imagining what those originals look like what the Snowy Day originals must have looked like when they, like, if you could see those shadows and like light them from above, God, they must just blow you away. I've never seen those in real life.
Seen them in real life. No, I've never known to know. But yeah, there's something about collage work that the one close up that I've ever been in is that there's a wonderful artist, children's book artist, and he's done collage work too, named Evan Turk, and his debut was in a book called Grandfather Gandhi. And I was at Books of Wonder in New York when he brought one of his original pieces, and it was just like, this is it. It was so much more contour than I think I realized it would be. And yet, I've done collages when I was a kid, and as a teacher, I do collage work with kids. And like, I know that when you collage, when you stack paper, it gets a layer. But to be able to see it in real life and to know is just, yeah, it's a cool thing. I'm glad you worked with real material, and that with the way you photographed it, it still maintains some of that integrity of being real material.
Yeah, I you know, in my next works, I intend to push that even further, I guess, to push the distance between some of the paper and the backgrounds even further, and just kind of see what I can do with that shadow on the page. That's sort of my next the next dragon I'm chasing here. Yeah.
Where I'd love for you to read, Sean, actually plays with some of that shadow too. If you could start where we see the birds, the great break in the art, we see these birds. If you could just start here as an idea, and maybe just read to the end if you don't mind. I was gonna say, with those birds, you've slightly bent up the tips of the wings to get just enough shadow to notice it.
By that point in the book, I was really aware of how much that added. So I was definitely bending things off of the page.
So great. It's such a treat.
Putting my lights down lower so that they threw longer shadows. And yeah. At first, I think I started lighting overhead, you know, like, let's just keep this really even. And then, it started to play into it. So, okay, let me start from these birds. All right. Here's an idea. Here's a theory. Here's a reminder. If the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of freedom, if the Statue of Liberty has welcomed millions of immigrants to the United States, then how can she stand still? Liberty and freedom from oppression are not things you get or grant by standing around like some kind of statue. No, these are things that require action, courage, and unwillingness to rest. The Statue of Liberty was not built to welcome just 1,886 immigrants from Italy on one certain Sunday in, say, 1886. No, she was built to welcome 3,000 immigrants from Poland the next day. The next day, 5,000 Norwegians. After that, 10,000 Glaswegians. Then Cambodians, then Estonians, Somalis, Nepalese, Syrians, Liberians. It never ends. It cannot end. After all, the Statue of Liberty is an immigrant too. And this is why she's moving. This is why she's striding. In welcoming the poor, the tired, the struggling to breathe free, she is not content to wait. She must meet them in the sea.
Whew. Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you that final question. I'm going to bring it back to children. But I want to thank you for your time here with me tonight, Sean, and specifically for your time spent on making this book what it is and allowing us to get chills at the end of reading this story because of the way your art and his words just pull us into the now. It's such a beautiful thing. And I'll make sure that I link to that beautiful, beautiful book trailer you made. I'll embed that beautiful book trailer that captures that same sentiment. Ah, man, so much to talk about.
Yeah. I know.
And we'll save it for next time. So, Sean, thank you. Tomorrow, I will see a library full of children. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Yeah. This might be weird. This might be weird, but here's my message. Try starting something that today that you can't finish today, whether that's an art project or a social experiment, or do something that's going to take you way longer than a day, and you'll surprise yourself. That's what I did with this book. And when you asked me that question, that's the best thing that comes to mind is engulf yourself in something creative and be surprised by what happens.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 400 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them, and Books Between, a podcast hosted by Karina Allen, helping to connect kids ages 8 to 12 and their parents, teachers, and librarians with books they'll love. Our theme music is composed by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I would love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast through Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Vashti Harrison shares Little Leaders, Bold Women in Black History, her debut as both author and illustrator. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.